Peter knew fishing. He wasn't a hobbyist. He wasn't even a passionate sports fisherman. This was his job, his career, his business. Probably a business that had been handed down for generations. Likely his father and his grandfather and his great-grandfather were fishermen. And he wasn't out on the coast with a rod and a reel trying to catch something for dinner that night. He was a small businessman. His family and another family, James and John among them, together had invested money and bought two boats. And although we picture them as little boats compared to what we think of now, in terms of the resources invested, they were the equivalent of a professional fishing boat now. If you went out to the bay and you see those boats with traps in the back, the lobster boats in some places, the tuna boats in other places, but the boats that go out every day, a commercial fisherman, a businessman and a fisherman who went out every day, 6 days a week, long hours trying to catch fish. He knew what he was doing. He fed his family that way. He lived that. And he was also a man who had already for a number of years been following after God. He wasn't just raised in the Jewish faith, but he had sought diligently to find a faithful way of following God. He'd already been a disciple of John the Baptist, we learn from another passage in the scriptures. And it's only when John the Baptist points him to Jesus that he transfers his discipleship. With John the Baptist's blessing, he moves to Jesus and says, I will follow you. I want to learn about God from you. I want to follow God as faithfully as I can. And there's no contradiction between that and him continuing in his work, continuing to work in his business, while supporting Jesus and learning from Jesus. But here comes a moment when Jesus has gone out on Peter's boat and preached to the crowd. This is something he did a number of times and did it wisely. It's hard to preach to a large crowd in those days. You don't have microphones like this. And so they would gather around the coast of the lake, and he would go out just a little ways into the lake, and then his voice would project across the water, sort of that natural theater experience you have. As his voice would project from the water, the boat, across the water to all the people on the coast. And so thousands could gather and hear him. He teaches. And then at the end of that, he does a miracle. He says to Peter, throw your nets into the water. And Peter, who knows fishing, knows first that this is not the time of day to fish. I don't know that much about fishing in general, and I certainly don't know about fishing in a lake in the Middle East. But in that place, it was best to fish in the evening. For some reason, the fish would come up. I don't know if that had to do with the temperature or if that had to do with the darkness or what it was. But it's better to fish at night. And so Peter already knows this is not the time to fish. And on top of that, Peter and his business partners had already spent the entire night, the best hours for fishing, trying to fish and catching nothing. Sometimes you just have a bad day in your job. And they had it. So they know even at the best times right now, the fish are not biting. The fish are not swimming in the right place. So he knows naturally this is not going to happen. And yet God did a miracle. God gathered up so many fish. It says their nets were breaking. And remember, this is not one of those little nets that you see fishermen where they have their rod and their reel and then they have their little net to scoop up one fish. No, again, this is commercial. This is a giant net. Sometimes they would get two boats and put one net between them so they could trawl with a giant net between two boats. This time it sounds like there was a net for just the one boat, but it would still be a big net, scooping up maybe hundreds of fish, hundreds of pounds of fish, so much that the net's breaking, and they throw the fish in, and they have to get their other boat because there's too much fish. And they fill the other boat, and both of the boats are literally sinking. They're so filled with fish. And Peter rightly recognizes this is a miracle. But he doesn't yet know the meaning of the miracle. What's the point of this? It's great. It's going to be a great day for their business. They went from making nothing that day to doing a week or maybe even a month's worth of profit in one day. Any businessman will be happy at that. Doesn't matter whether you're selling hardware or selling houses. But to make a month worth of profit in one day, it's incredible. And he recognizes something about Jesus. He still hasn't put all the pieces together. Nobody fully understood who Jesus was until after the resurrection. So Peter probably does not realize that Jesus is God at this point, but he does recognize that Jesus has some unique connection to God, that whatever Jesus is going to tell him about God, he's going to have a unique authority. And so Peter knows he's got to listen to Jesus. And Jesus tells him, now you're going to be fishing for men. Now, there's a few different things we need to hear from that and learn from that. The first is that we've got to get caught. We'll get to the fishing part, the fishermen part, later. But first, we've got to get caught. Fishers of men is a pretty obvious analogy, a metaphor. Go out and catch people now, Peter. Go bring people to me. Don't bring me a net full of fish. Bring me a net full of people for my kingdom. Bring people to God. And we have got to get caught if we're not already. We need to be brought to God. Now, every analogy is limited. Here's a big limitation on this analogy. You catch fish so you can eat them or sell them for someone else to eat. We need to get caught because we need to be saved for Jesus. We need to be rescued. We're not objects for sale. We're in desperate need. It's important for us to realize that because it's only when you know that you have a desperate need that you're going to be ready to say yes to God. And we need to understand that the other people out there who may not be saved yet also have a desperate need for God. As long as we're thinking of religion as either a nice addition to our life to flesh it out a little more and add a little something to it, or religion as sort of a personal choice and we all have our own things, we're not going to be ready to follow Jesus, and we're not going to be ready to invite others. So often it can feel like we're pushing our religion on others, or we don't want to talk to people about Christianity because we're afraid we're going to be pushing our faith on others. Let them do their thing and we'll do ours. But when you see it as a rescue for people in need, that's different. You see a car broken down on the side of the road and you don't say, well, I would stop for them, but I don't want to impose. Now, you might not stop for them because you're scared or because you know that we live in an age of cell phones and AAA and other people. And so you say, well, somebody else will probably stop. But if you're in a really deserted area, a stretch where there's no services for a long way, and you see a family with little children, and it's 110 degrees out, and nobody else is driving by, and they don't seem to have a cell phone. Again, hopefully at that point you'll stop. But what you certainly won't say is, well, I don't want to impose on anybody. And if you see someone hurt, seriously hurt, and you're the only one around. An older lady is out walking, and she trips on the curb and falls. And you hear a scream, and you see a bone that looks like it's broken. You don't say, well, I don't want to push my values on her. I mean, I believe that bones shouldn't be broken, but I don't want to push that on her. Hopefully you'll go and help, or you'll call an ambulance. You'll seek to rescue her, because she needs you. But there are people all around us who are in desperate need of God. And it's not presumptuous. And it's not judgmental. And it's not nosy to offer them rescue. We can't force Jesus on anyone, and he wouldn't want us to. But we can offer rescue. We can offer help. They are in need. And again, we need to understand everybody needs Jesus. There are the obvious cases, right? People who are in bondage to drugs, to gangs, to homelessness, who are obviously desperate and hopefully know that they're desperate. They want a solution. Maybe they don't feel like they have any hope, and they're waiting for someone to offer that hope to them. But there's also an old quote that says that most people live lives of quiet desperation. I think the truth is, in a sense, all people. We distract ourselves with all sorts of entertainment. Entertainment's great, unless it's functioning as a distraction from the things that really matter. We keep ourselves busy, whether that's with work or with watching too much TV. Or we are always doing something. Or we're always finding ways to distract ourselves so that we don't have to think about desperation. Some people have ambitious goals. I've met people whose life goal was to retire by the time they hit 40. I'm going to make enough money so fast that I can retire and play golf the rest of my life. I've heard stories about people who had some kind of material goal that they were reaching out for. I just want to own a Jaguar, the car, not the cat. The cat would be really impressive, actually, but I just want to save enough money to own that car or to have this kind of house or to show people that I'm successful. Other people, it's maybe a more noble goal, but it's I just want my kids to make it. I just want to do enough for my kids that they're successful. But you have a sense of my whole life leading up to this goal or that goal that I've chosen. And some nights you wonder, what happens if I don't meet that goal? Or what happens if I do meet that goal? Does life have meaning after my kids are grown? Does life have meaning after I get this thing or don't get this thing? Is there anything bigger and beyond? What if my kids are successful, but they're not happy or good? Most people have some sense of desperation somewhere in their lives, but we don't want to think about it. So we look at other people and we compare ourselves and say, at least I'm not like this person, right? Remember the story of the Pharisee and the tax collector, both of them in the temple praying. And the Pharisee is praying loudly, at least I'm not like that guy. I know I'm holy because I know that guy's bad and I'm better than him. Most of us have somebody that we could point to and say, at least I'm not like that person. And that person might be pointing right back at us because we judge according to the best light for ourselves and the worst light for someone else. Others are so desperate and know it that they judge themselves by the worst light and everyone else by a better light. But God rescues us. If you know that you need Him, He rescues us. It's not that he's given you bad things in your life to drive you to him. It's that life is already hard. And the entire time he's reaching out a hand to you and saying, come, come join my family, come join my kingdom, come be set free. Come have meaning and purpose. Come have a family. Come have an eternal relationship with me. Come be rescued, be caught. Don't swim out of the net, be caught. And you just have to know your need enough to say, yes, you can catch me. Yes. So first off, we've all got to get caught. And if you don't know that you need Jesus, look at your life and look at your heart, look at your purpose. Consider the value of your life from the perspective of eternity. What is your life for? And there are so many good things you can do in your life. I'm not trying to wash away the value of everything else. But first and foremost, your life is meant for God. And if you follow him, if you let him rescue you, so many other good things come. If you put being a follower of God before being a parent, you end up a better parent. If you put following God before getting rich, you find yourself so deeply satisfied with the things that you have that you feel rich even if you're not. Follow God first. Be caught. Second, like Peter, we are called to be fishers of men. Many people hear this passage and they say, yeah, Peter was an apostle. He was a special person. He's sort of the equivalent of someone called into full-time ministry. Now, Peter was eventually called into full-time ministry. But he was called to be a fisher of men even before that. A follower of Jesus even before that. In fact, in this passage, you see him walking away from everything, including these boats that he and his partners own. And yet, after the resurrection, Jesus goes back and calls him again. And he's back working in the same business. And it's not because he's backsliding. See, if he'd actually abandoned the boats in the sense of, I don't care what happens to him, the next person who comes by can have these ships that support our family. One, his family would have been on the street and starving. But two, he wouldn't have had boats to go back to. When Jesus at this point calls him to be a fisher of men, yes, he immediately follows Jesus regardless of the consequences. But the family business goes on, and he returns to it. And he only becomes, quote unquote, full-time in ministry when the ministry God is leading to him requires all of his time. Paul talks about this later. He says it's good to pay clergy so that they can be full-time in the ministry. But that's not because it makes them have a different call than everyone else. It's that sometimes the work of pastoring a church just takes a lot of time. I've done ministry when I had another job full-time. And I've done ministry, obviously, now when it's my full-time job. I can give you a lot more time. I had a hard time when I was teaching full-time and pastoring a church. I was one of several clergy, but I would always be trying to squeeze in the sermon prep. And I would need to meet with someone who really needed to talk about something important and have to say, well, I think I have lunch open in 3 weeks. Because I had a full-time job. And so being quote-unquote full-time in ministry, that's just a practical decision. It's a useful decision. But Peter didn't get a calling when he got a paycheck. The paycheck just freed him up. And you understand there are particular things that clergy are called to do that not everyone is called to do, right? Happen to be the only one here today who gets to lead communion. It's an incredible honor. That's actually not a skill of mine. That's actually God having set me aside to do that thing with the blessing of a a community of faith. That's wonderful. I'm also the only one who preaches regularly here today. That's a special calling. Sharing the gospel with other people, that's not a special calling. That's a calling for every single one of us. See, Peter gets told to be a fisher of men here. But at the end of the Gospels, in the passage that we call the Great Commission, every single follower of Jesus Christ is told to go make disciples, to be fishers of men and women. Every single Christian. Each of us has unique pieces to our calling, and you have a unique calling. Your job is a unique part of your calling. Your family is a unique part of your calling. If you are a mother or a father, you are the only mother and the only father your children have. That's a unique calling. No one can replace you. God can work through other people for the good of your children, but no one can replace you. No one can replace you as a sister or a brother, a daughter or a son, a friend. You have a unique calling, and you have special gifts. But all of us have shared callings as well, and every single one of us is called to be a fisher of men. Every single one of us is called to share the gospel, to work in the ministry of evangelism and discipleship. However we do that, all of us. I want to be very firm about that, because so often we'll say, well, that's not my gifting. That's not my calling. I'm not a pastor. I'm not a missionary. I'm not an evangelist. So I'm not called to do those things. But no, you're a Christian. In fact, I am called to evangelism only because I am a Christian. I'm not particularly gifted at it. I'll say more about that in a second. But I'm called to share Jesus because I'm a Christian like the rest of you. That's why I'm called to evangelism. My particular giftings are in other areas. But all of us are called to share Jesus. Now here's a piece that I want you to see, though. Because when I hear a call to evangelism, when I remind myself that I'm called to evangelism, I get nervous. And I feel guilty. And I need to remember that in this story, Jesus does a miracle that catches the fish. Peter was a great fisherman who didn't catch anything that day. And Jesus does an overwhelming miracle, catching fish upon fish upon fish. And then says, look at that image and understand that's what I'm going to do through you with human beings. Jesus does the miracle. Jesus catches the fish. And Jesus calls all of us to fish for men and women. And the implication there is that he again will do the miracle. He will be the one who brings the results. We are called to be faithful. We're called to cast our nets. Right? Jesus could have prayed and had a bunch of fish jump out of the lake and land in the boat. But he didn't. He said, cast your nets. He also could have waited until Peter had a particularly good day fishing. He said, wow, Peter, you're really good at that. Become that good at being a fisher of men. But no, he does a miracle where God catches the fish and then calls Peter to set out his nets for human beings. So when I get on an airplane and sit down next to somebody, and then I think of all the stories I've heard in my life of preachers getting on airplanes, sitting down next to a stranger and leading them to become followers of Jesus Christ. And my first thought is, I do not want to start a conversation with a stranger and then be stuck for the next 6 hours next to a stranger that I have to talk to. Because I'm an introvert. And when I get on a plane, I either want my headphones in or I want a book in front of my face. And I think, that's just not me. I'm not a start a conversation with somebody you're going to be next to for 6 hours kind of person. I'm not a go up to a stranger you've never met before and just casually become their best friend. I've heard of so many people who they say, that person doesn't know any strangers. Everybody that person meets becomes their best friend. And you look at those people and say, evangelism should be easy for that person. Everyone that person meets becomes a friend. And so it's easy and natural to then say, let me tell you about my best friend. His name's Jesus Christ. That's not my gifting. Right? And I'll feel guilty because I have not led that many people to Jesus Christ in my life. And the ones I have led have been mostly because I'm a pastor. And people will sometimes sit down with me saying, I want to become a Christian. Talk to me about it. Or before I was a pastor and I would volunteer with the youth, I'd go to camp with them and somebody else would present the gospel from a stage and I'd have a chance to pray with a young man or a young woman. And I wasn't very gifted with youth either. Juliet's much better with the teens in our church than I am in terms of her gifting. But I would just show up and I'd pray with them. But I don't have the gifting to suddenly meet incredible numbers of people and by my charisma invite them to Jesus Christ. That's not my gifting. I'm more of a teacher than an evangelist in terms of gifting. And yet, I am called to share Jesus Christ and to trust that God will do the work. God will supply the fish. God will bring the harvest, change the metaphor. My call is to be faithful, which means putting my net out. It means when I have an opportunity. It means when I feel uncomfortable, I nevertheless try to be faithful. It means when there's an opportunity, I say yes to it. About once a week, I go to Panera in the mornings for a couple hours to do some study time. It's a good way for me just to get out of the office, be in a different space. I bring a book about the Bible or a book about theology, and I just sit for about 2 hours, and I drink coffee, and I study. I do lots of studying for sermons, but that's my non-sermon study time. It's something I've been doing ever since I got here. And so I'm there often enough that now people start talking to me. And I say hi to people. I try to smile and just say hi, and that's about it. Because I'm wearing a collar, they see that I'm a weirdo. That helps starting conversations, right? The collar is actually really useful to me. I don't wear it as a uniform in the sense of wanting respect or something like that. I wear it because when I was first ordained as a deacon, one of the first times I went out in public on my way home from church, I stopped off at a pharmacy to get some flu medicine because I was feeling sick, and a stranger walked up to me and said, can you come pray for my family? We're across the parking lot right now. And I went over and I prayed for their family, total strangers. And so even though I'm an introvert, a collar becomes an invitation for people to come talk to me. That's helpful. So I'm at Panera, and people will just sometimes come up and talk to me. People who don't seem to have much interest in religion will say hi. And I say hi back, and I try to be friendly. And I smile, and I ask them questions. And I'm not particularly good at it. But I try to be faithful. And I have family members who are not Christians. And I try to reach out and talk to them about Jesus. Not in a pushy way. Not in a let me tell you all the things that are wrong about your life way. Not in a everything we talk about is going to come back to Jesus way. But I just try to answer questions. So my cousin's daughter starts asking questions about religion. And I just try to answer those questions and say, do you want to have a follow-up? Do you want to talk again? Do you want to get coffee? I try to pray for the people that I know that are not Christians. When someone stops coming to the church, I pray for them. When I meet someone outside the church who I don't know if they come to any church, I pray for them. When I have family members and friends that I know are not Christians, I pray for them. And I pray that God will use someone to reach them. And I really don't care if it's me or not. But I trust that God will respond to my prayers and that God might use me to respond to other people's prayers. I mentioned this to you before, but I know there are so many of you that are praying for adult children, for example, who are raised in the church but don't go to church, and who has heard the gospel, maybe were baptized as infants, but don't really claim to be Christians. Or if they say they're maybe Christians, but they're not sure. And you pray for them, and you've tried to talk to them about Jesus, but they can't seem to hear you. And it feels like mom or dad is the last person they're going to listen to. But maybe there is someone else that God will work through to share the gospel with them. Someone else he will use to cast a net and catch them. But your prayers will still be a part of that. And meanwhile, maybe God will use you to reach somebody else's son or daughter. Maybe that person you meet on the street or in the grocery store or at work or somewhere. Maybe that friend that you talk about all kinds of other things with, that you have lunch with or coffee with. Maybe that person is being prayed for by someone else. Maybe someone has been praying for decades for that person to become a Christian, and God wants to use you. And again, I'm not saying that everything in the conversation you shove God down their throat. But maybe it starts with just not avoiding the topic. It's very natural to say, so I was in church on Sunday, and at the coffee hour, we had really good whatever. I heard it's chili verde today, is the rumor I've heard. Sounds good. So you're meeting with your friend over lunch in a Mexican restaurant. You said, oh, we had this really good chili verde on Sunday at church. Do you go to church? I don't remember. I know you used to go to church. Do you go again? Have you thought about coming back? Have you thought about coming with me? You could say that in a really natural way. That's not forcing church on them. And if they say, no, I'm not interested in church, I said, can you tell me a little bit about that? And then you really listen. And someone says, oh, look, it's fine for you, but I stopped going to church. I hated it. Tell me about that. Christians are a bunch of phonies. Oh, I'm so sorry. Tell me about that. There's an old joke where somebody said, oh, I can't go to church. It's full of hypocrites. And the response was, oh, no, there's room for one more. Right? I like that joke. There's a lot of truth to it. But you don't actually have to respond that way. Church is full of hypocrites. Well, tell me about that. And after they tell you some of their experiences, you can say, I'm so sorry. And you can say, you know what? Sometimes I'm a hypocrite too. Hypocrite too. I'm trying not to be. Let me tell you about what God has done in my life. He's helping me be better than I was. But it's a struggle. But he has been so good to me. Let me tell you about that. Do you have any questions I can answer? I don't have all the answers, but I'll try. You could have that conversation with someone, with a friend. Even with a son or a daughter or a grandson or a granddaughter who's heard all the religious stuff and isn't interested anymore, that person you can still ask questions. What about church has turned you off? What about God doesn't seem real to you or doesn't seem necessary to you? I really want to hear this time. I know I've preached at you before, and I haven't really listened to you. And I'm sorry for that, and I hope you'll trust me by telling me what your real thoughts are on this. Help me understand. And then you can begin praying for that person in detail. That could be a hard conversation. Because you might hear, well, you know, I felt like you didn't really live out what you were preaching, mom or dad or grandma or grandpa. But you know, if you hear that, at least you've gotten at the truth. You can say, you know, that hurts, but there's probably a lot of truth to that. And I'm trying to do better. Let me tell you about what God has done in me and is doing in me. Now, you understand, I'm just throwing out ideas here of conversations to have. But do you understand how that's different than feeling this pressure where I'm supposed to lead people to Jesus Christ and I feel really bad that I haven't? And so I'm just not going to do that because that's just not me. Or I'm not going to do that because I'm not good at that. Or I'm not going to do that because that's not natural for me. The answer is, you don't have to be gifted at it. You don't have to be skilled at it. You don't have to be a professional. You don't have to see a lot of success. But you do need to be as faithful. And God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son to die for the world and bring it in relationship to him. And he wants to involve us in that family business. Peter was raised to be a fisherman in his family business. All of us are called to be in the family business of Jesus Christ, bringing people into his kingdom and helping them grow up in his kingdom. It's the invitation to you. And God will be faithful to your faithfulness. He will work through you. I don't know how. I don't know which gifts he will bring out. I don't know how he will use the gifts he's given you. You might be the quiet person who rarely has conversations with strangers, but your prayers do miracles that you will not even know about until you get to heaven. You might be the person who quietly listens to a friend, and that listening does more to heal wounds that bad Christians have done to that person, to remove obstacles to them becoming a Christian. That listening might be the thing that God uses to prepare the ground for them to become a Christian. You don't know how God will use you, but you do need to know that he is calling you to say yes and to be ready to be faithful. So again, make sure you're caught. Be ready to be a fisher of men. And trust that God will bring the results. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.